calling Dorothy Jane with Jesus Himself. I'm so sorry that I missed your call, but if you'd leave your name and number, I would love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband, and let's talk grandkids. It is a joy to be a dad, of nine kids. Of course, I haven't seen my nine kids in 9 years, but it's still a joy to be a dad of nine kids. But there is some important stuff about that. So before we get into the serious, let me just let you know, I did send the postcard today to Susanna and Gloria Jane because there's a note online that explains a little bit more. But the concern I have is, I wonder, because Eric Lee has said no more than Leo, that's it. Tirza seems to have bought into the world, so I don't know, because she's closed off. I was delighted that Julia started early, but I don't know. The information I got was not what I would call informative. It was provocative from Isaac. But my assumption is there are issues there, and what happens beyond Charlotte and James, I'm unsure about. But I did make this suggestion, and I meant it, about what could happen in order to change the future. But a bit of satire. Satire, the important thing. Sunday's the first, I believe. It'll be my half year point, and I have my 5-year goal of doing a million jumping jacks in 5 years. Well, by Sunday, I will be I will cross 110,000 point towards that. So I'll be 10% of the time, but 11% of the goal. So I'm ahead of schedule. So my challenge to George is still there. Do it with me. But that reminds me of sports. And one of the things I thought about is years ago, many years ago, 1976, I remember, because I was in the Air Force at the time, and a popular magazine at the time was National Lampoon. And, I didn't see too much of it, but I remember one cover. And so I got the cover. I found it online. And so the image of the cover was, because at the time there was some tension about the Olympics and the Soviet Union at the time. There was concern about the use of chemical additives and things of that nature, which I don't know where all that went. But either way, so they did this satire of this woman who obviously looks like more than just a woman. And it was funny back then. The problem is our world has changed. It's no longer funny. It's the reality. Because we have a man in the Olympics competing as a woman. The world has changed, and not changed for the better. And this is, when I was young, it was satire. For my kids, it's reality. And that is a serious concern. So I look at the things around the world, and I see things like that, and it concerns me. On the other side of the coin, I do keep up a little bit with various places in the world. And one that I've done, obviously, some study on is the Ivory Coast, because that's where the bulk of the slavery, I think it's the last number heard is 1.5 million people are enslaved, mostly kids, harvesting cocoa in the Ivory Coast and a little bit in the nearby countries. But in studying that, and that's why I refuse to buy a Nestle product, because they're probably the largest user of slave labor, and that's why I will probably never have another Perrier for the rest of my life. But again, I've stated that before, and I'll just remind you. You go from Ivory Coast and go wrap a little bit around to a few countries coastal wise. It's just one anyway, but nearby Senegal, and I studied them also a little while a few years ago. Because one of the issues there and several other countries there is a part of the community, you know, because this is a part of Africa where it's not a light, a light black skin color, but a lot of these people are just black. I mean, real dark black. And so two things caught my eye. One was there is a marketplace for skin lightening products. You know, and I remember going back to the 1960s and 70s, there was the idea in the U.S., black is beautiful. They're doing the opposite there, which I found most unfortunate because it's, you know, the 1 Peter 3, it's an inward, inside beauty that makes a woman gorgeous, like the woman I love. But anyway, there's a lighter side to that also, because I remember listening to a gentleman speak when I was studying that, and he talked about one problem he has with his wife, who is, like him, was very, very black, is that at nighttime, we turn out the lights, he can't find her. So it was funny. Obviously I couldn't make that joke, but he could because it fit. And, you know, there's a joy of saying, this is the way I am, let's have fun. And I appreciated that. There is a concern about families. And one of the things that's happening also in that area, in Africa, there's a significant issue with influx of people going to Europe. Part of it is due to things like the rise of Boko Haram. Boko Haram meaning no Western education. These are people who have a most of the Muslim community, from what I understand, will call it a distorted version of Islam. And some will argue that's the true version, but, you know, again, that's not the point here. But there's a lot of issues happening, so there's a lot of people escaping because because there are problems, and there are issues with is it Senegal or is it a nearby country where a lot of, you know, you take your electronics and say, well, this doesn't work anymore, throw it in the trash. Well, where does it go? Does it go into the local landfill? Some of it, yes. A lot of it gets put on a ship and goes to Africa to be dumped. And there are places where there are just huge places. And what a lot of people do is they have places where people actually live, and they rummage through this stuff in order to get something valuable out of it, in order to make money. It's a horrible lifestyle. But that's why we dump our trash and don't see it anymore, because it goes to places like this, and we destroy their environment rather than destroying our own. So we don't see it. You know, it's like the slavery in Ivory Coast or other places. We do it over there, so we don't see it. But anyway, there was a group that I saw also in Senegal, and that's why the other comments. And I saw, and this is from Al Jazeera, which is, not what I call the greatest news organization, but every once in a while you have things that I find fascinating that others don't cover. And they talked about how there is an effort to develop small community farms using particular techniques that are effective for an area that has a lot of desert. And I found that delightful. I listened to one man who talked about, we want to do this. It will take maybe some years in order to get it going, but this way our family stays here. And I could relate to that man, because his importance was his family and keeping the family home, not abandoning and going somewhere else. I found that remarkable. But also, you know, considering family, and which is the important thing, getting to the grandkids thing in a moment, is some people have issues with families, and especially when sometimes third parties at least facilitate destructions of families. And, you know, I've pointed out before on my wall behind me, I have lots of pictures, you know, of my wife and so forth, and myself that my wife took with Eric Lee while we were in Switzerland. Walter and Zadok, which I think this was one of the last pictures my wife actually sent to me of them, which, you know, obviously a long time ago, but of the family and so forth, you know, a couple with grandkids. And actually, this one is me as a baby. One of the few pictures I have, then my family and so forth. But so it's basically all family, except one, this picture right here. The gentleman's name is Shadi Sheda, Shadi Yosef Sheda. And the Yosef I found out later because that's Joseph is my middle name. He's on my wall. The picture is from an interview of him. He lives near Idlib in Syria. He's a follower of Christ and has celebrated his family as part of the Christian community, the small Christian community in that area, until a bomb hit his home and wiped out his wife, his mom, and his kids. And that image, the look on his face, because I watched the interview, I listened to the tone of him. I listened to him as he showed various pieces of clothing, a backpack and things of that nature, and various artifacts that his kids would use. And that's what he was clinging to, because that's all he had. I have, you know, a couple of photos. I can relate to this man. And I will claim that man's my brother. But it reminds me of how so many people, because, I mean, you know, it's the whole point of when I talked about Amran Dakhnish and Abdullah Issa. Amran Dakhnish was the boy in the blue chair in the ambulance years ago that American news media was all panicked over, and it was, of course, staged by the White Helmets. It was staged. And, of course, Abdullah Issa was the guy who was beheaded by ISIS and recorded by the beheading was, you know, live video recorded by the White Helmets. You know, so the White Helmets has a little issue. But the things are distorted. And you see the cruelty that happens in other places. And sometimes people expose these kind of cruelties. One of the areas, you know, because obviously I'm familiar with those who expose things like, you know, in the communications area. You know, I did several videos where I discussed several people who exposed Room 641A in San Francisco years ago. The gentleman's name is skipping me, but like Thomas Drake, William Binney, and things of that nature, names that were popular before, you know, the Snowden thing. You know, a bunch of things were done, and these people are just kind of thrown off into a corner. And then some of the people, Michael Hastings, several reporters and whatnot, met a demise due to perhaps it being inflicted upon them because they were on to relatively sensitive areas. There are people involved in software who also have met their demise, which, you know, kind of rings home a little harder. There was a gentleman a while back, a few years ago, who exposed how because he was worked with a drone operator. You know, we have, at the time it was Nevada, I don't know where it's done now, where we have drone operators that operate drones basically on the other side of the world. They kill people. It was there during the Bush administration. It started picking up significantly during the Obama administration, and it continued on during Trump, and apparently is we kill in large numbers today. And the one gentleman who first exposed this, and I don't have his name in front of me, he ended up in prison because he exposed the misdeeds of the U.S. government. And I don't know if he's free or not. I didn't check on this before I did this. But when you point out the misdeeds of the government or a large institution, you know, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. You know, I've heard this before. You know, and the persecution, especially by the state, it's going to happen whether you're a godly person or not. You point out the misdeeds of the state, you will be persecuted. This week, another drone operator who several years ago exposed this. Well, okay, and of course, as I did point out, John Kiriakou, I couldn't think of the name, John. It's kind of like, oh, gee, John Kiriakou, who is a follower of Christ and was the one who exposed that the U.S. government tortures people. And the issue is, it wasn't that it happens because of a rogue person within the CIA. It was policy. The U.S. government's policy was to torture people. And, you know, I find it fascinating because a lot of times people talk about torture and it's waterboarding. Well, waterboarding is very unfortunate. And by the way, my offer to have Jim Cross, Render Keynes, or either one of them, or perhaps the current pastors at both institutions, if they want to waterboard me in front of their congregation, that offer stands. You know, and of course I did the video on that. But problem with waterboarding is, yes, it is very uncomfortable, but it's very survivable. And it's cruel, but it's minor compared to some other things that the U.S. government does. And, you know, I mentioned before, Bradley Manning, who wants to be called Chelsea Manning, apparently did go through the cold cell kind of thing, where you're in a prison cell and they keep it down to 50 degrees and you have no blankets and they keep you naked. That's it. And then the other thing is sleep deprivation. And this is not, we're going to deprive you of sleep for a few hours. This is, we're going to deprive you of sleep for 2 weeks straight. And the way we do that is constant loud music. And every once in a while, like every hour or so, you're in a cold room and we're going to throw ice water on you. The U.S. government at work, raw. And John Kiriakou exposed that. The government said, yes, we do that. You're going to prison because you exposed our misdeeds. Does this remind you of the institutional church? Why, yes, it does. Daniel Hale was sentenced this week to almost 4 years in prison because he exposed more of the drone program, including that as much as 90%, over half, but the information is argued, but over half, but as much as 90% of the targets are civilians, and a good number of that is children. So our government has people sitting in air-conditioned comfort with flat screens in front of them and joysticks and so forth, watching cameras as they fly a drone. You got a pilot and basically a pilot and a gunner. And they fly a drone on the other side of the world and say, oh, let's look at that person over there and kill him. Oh, we kill a few people around. He looks suspicious. It's not that we say, oh, he's... And of course, then we say, oh, you know, there have been cases that are documented that they say, oh, well, no, it was actually a goat or something of that nature. No, we're killing, and this is not a dozen people. We're in hundreds or thousands. And you expose that, you go to jail. This is our government. Now, if we understand that we can do those kind of things, when you talk about other issues, like the obvious things that are happening, you know, the virus, fraud, the global warming or climate change, fraud, the economic fraud that's happening, that's been happening for 100 years with the Federal Reserve and so forth, but all these things that are happening is suddenly accelerating. And accelerating, you know, it shocked me. I was surprised. A year ago, I thought the whole COVID-19 fiasco would last a few weeks and the stupidity of it would, you know, it'd go away. We're at a year and a half plus, because remember, it was, what did they call it, Event 201 that happened in like October, almost 2 years ago, in order to basically plan out the scenario. And then they did what, like in August, and they announced it in October. Plan out the scenario, you know, and then of course Trump made the simulation reality. And then we have, you know, it's interesting to me. A lot of people say we separated ourselves from the monarchy and went to democracy. Don't buy that. I'm sorry, that's not true. One, if you notice, so many political figures are second or third generation. You know, take an easy one, Prescott Bush, the senator, his son, George Bush, the president, his son, George Bush, the president. You know, we see, you know, the Kennedy dynasty, but they had some issues, so they were kind of removed. The Rockefellers, there's several in there. The people, the governor of California, he's got a history. Several people in New York and whatnot. And a whole bunch of people in House and Senate are just second, third generation within the political environment. It is a dynasty. And, you know, we say, well, we don't have the king stuff. Well, they do in England and in Netherlands. And they say, oh, but they're not real power. Oh, yeah, right. And then, of course, you have other dynasties, specifically in the banking community. This is, you know, multiple years. And, you know, the World Economic Forum, I find it fascinating. Klaus Schwab, who is, you know, getting up in age, who is the head of this organization, actually, the founder. Part of the policy of the World Economic Forum is the next head is one of his descendants. It's in their policy. It's a dynasty. So, you know, and you think, oh, but democracy, no. So again, democracy and freedom are opposites. I think that needs to sink in. Democracy and freedom offer opposites. They're often used in the same sentence. It's like Christian Zionism. They're opposites. I mean, sorry. Anyway. But all these things are happening, and what is some of the focus? As I pointed out yesterday in the voicemail, money, power, eugenics. You see the greatest theft ever, you know, because of, and you know, especially because of inflation, the amount of theft that's going on, power grabs, we're talking trillions of dollars are being stolen. But because of all the facade, and we'll throw a few dollars here, a few dollars there, very few people care. Power is being centralized. You again, you have the destruction of the small business. And you have so many policies that shift from, you know, county to state, and state to federal, and federal to world bodies. the power of organizations. You know, for example, the World Health Organization, which is number one funder. He's either number one, number two is, you know, Bill Gates. And they have power. And their purpose is not world health, it's eugenics. And how do you see that? You see the birth rate plummeting. You see the death count skyrocketing. And again, as I pointed out, in the last few days, four times as many people have died from the current vaccine than all other vaccines combined. And this has been less than a year. Those are just the admitted numbers. A lot of people suggest that those admitted numbers are really low. And, you know, how do we do this? We build things on distortions. You know, the death count from COVID-19 is wildly exaggerated because the PCR test, as they call it, is not a test. It's a method to amplify things within DNA or RNA and things of that nature. And they have a cycle count, and each cycle effectively doubles. And so, you know, when you do a cycle count of 10, it's 1,000 times. You do it of 20, it's 1,000,000 times. You do it of 30, it's 1,000,000,000 times. You do it of 40, it's 1,000,000,000,000 times. And sometimes the PCR test that they've been doing has been over 40. They basically say 35 or above is useless. And that's where the testing has been done. And that's why we have the so-called case-demic. And they get people to live in fear. And especially the older population, what is documented, one of the biggest killers of older people, loneliness. And so you tell people you have to isolate, and the older population dies because of it. It's murder. So you have all those things going on. You have the destruction of the family, obviously, for a variety of reasons. And you have the vaccine that is demonstrably, you know, if you're pregnant, over 3/4 of those who are pregnant who take the vaccine miscarry. The material that grows, you know, one of the things that's important to understand is if you have a poison, a chemical poison, whatnot, and you have it in a small area, you put a little bit of poison in your finger, whatnot, and it's all localized, it can have a significant effect because it's concentrated in that area and can do a lot. If that poison is spread throughout your body, it probably has very little to no effect, and it doesn't grow. It flushes out of your system, and you're fine. It requires a certain concentration. That's why if you're exposed to a light amount of poison, it doesn't matter. You have to be exposed to enough. Whereas something like a cancer is something that grows within you. You know, it's a deformed cell that will grow. So once it's there, it grows. Well, a virus is like that. It's a foreign item that if it gets within you, it can use, just like, you know, the rest of your cells in your body who you feed, then can duplicate. Well, the virus will do the same out of the food you provided. So then it becomes a war between your defense mechanism and how fast the virus can reproduce. And then, of course, you have the idea of a vaccine where you expose your body to a milder version or limited amount of the virus in order to for your defense mechanism to say, oh, I recognize that. I am going to learn to kill it. However, they use the term vaccine, but many will argue it's not, because what it does is it's called, you know, a gene therapy, or, you know, there is DNA and mRNA, or the messenger, it's the messenger stuff. The DNA uses the one in order to, it's in the replication process. And so anyway, But what happens now is instead of doing like a cancer that will grow or a virus that feeds itself, these are actual cells, this is something that gets within your cells. So it's replicating within your cell to other cells within you, not foreign cells, your cells. And this is relatively new technology, although apparently some of the patents on COVID-19 vaccines are 20 years old. It's a novel virus that came out in 2019 and patents for it are 20 years old. Let me think about that a bit. Anyway, so there's a concern because where a lot of that is happening, again, as I've pointed out, the studies thus far have shown that a lot of that will collectivize in the woman's uterus. So there is some concern whether or not the reproduction rate will plummet. And of course, time will tell. And short-term evidence is it is. So, you know, we'll see. The good side is there's some evidence that 2-3 months the stuff flushes from your system. That may or may not be true. This is again, because, I mean, there are some people who really like the idea of genocide. So, and of course, a lot of people will point out that there's a lot of concern about people wanting to reduce the world population, like Bill Gates, and who says it directly. So these are the things that are happening. So I see the theft. And of course, there is the submission to the state. You know, Proverbs 19:84, trust in the state with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge it, and it'll keep a boot stamping on a human face forever. It's happening. We see the institutional church yielding to the state from mask mandates and obviously, how did they do this from the tax issue in the first place? But then, so they're yielding like this, like exactly what happened during the Third Reich. Again, where the Fourth Reich, it's the same thing happening again. No remembrance of former things. There's nothing new under the sun. Who said that? So you see it happening again. There was, as I pointed out, the Confessing Church that said no to the Third Reich. Apparently, the bulk of the American church are saying yes to the U.S. government. And it concerns me. And one of the things that has crossed my mind is, you know, I have never had the opportunity to embrace Leo or Charlotte or James. And the thought I had last night after I left the voicemail, considering the models that are set before my family, considering that the idea of the importance of family is clearly denied within my own family. That's the model my young kids see. They see the yielding to the institution. They see the idea of we want to have some of the material things in the world. We want to yield to the state because the state protects us. That's the model they see. And I really wonder. I have 9 kids. I have 3 grandkids. Will that be it? That thought scares me. But as I think about it, it doesn't surprise me if that would happen. Again, as I point out, Eric Lee said no to more kids. Jack, unless he repents, will not have kids. Tirza, again, it's only a guess, but it seems that she's bought into the world. Julia may be going through some difficulties. And I don't know. Well, again, the model set before, George, Susanna, Glory Jane, Walter, and Zadok, is that the family's not a good idea. It's a burden. And if you don't like it, if you want the world so much, focus on getting the world, not loving your family. I won't be surprised. I don't want this to happen, but I won't be surprised if I have 3 grandkids and that's it. You know, let me remind you one more time. As a guy in his 20s, I was taught to live a moral life. And I saw around me people killing their children through abortion. And I struggled with that. I said, that's wrong. And I said, I want to do something about it. I studied. And it became very clear to me, there's only one way to do something about it. Be a follower of Christ. So that's the way the Lord grabbed me. So I studied. I became active as a pro-life activist and got involved with the institutional church. And I learned, because I didn't get involved to be part of a social club, I wanted to protect life. And more, I wanted to know my Creator. In learning about life, I learned the easy stuff, the fluff stuff first. I learned Jeremiah 1:5 and Psalm 139. Because in those ways, the pro-life community rallied around those verses and, you know, things like that. You know, Proverbs 31, you know, speak for those who cannot speak for themselves, things of that nature. And, you know, we learn about, you know, I found it fascinating because I did study the John the Baptist in Elizabeth's womb. And then Elizabeth gets a visit from Mary, and the baby leaped in the womb, and, you know, there is the acknowledgement that the person there was praising the Lord, the person, things of that nature, and of course recognized Christ in the womb, and there's strong evidence that Christ was, as a baby, only days old, but recognized as alive in Mary's womb. Anyway, there was a lot of these things were fascinating, but those are things that show that life exists. It's not a command. And then when I went to Genesis 1:28, be fruitful and multiply, God's first command to man, it became, oh, we're missing the obvious. Yes, we have all the evidence that life is indeed sacred because it is God's gift. He is the author of life, and he recognizes life from the moment of conception. The evidence is clear. He also recognizes the importance of a human life, you know, starting with Genesis 9:6, whosoever sheds the blood of man, shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God did God make man. So God makes people, and they have the image of God in them. And we are not to kill them. So we have that constant message. But we have the command to be fruitful and multiply. And that's where the pro-life community said, I don't want to hear, I don't want to hear, I don't want to hear. Because again, it's one thing to proclaim to others, let's impose laws, let's prevent abortion and whatnot. But stay out of my bedroom. That's why when Jim Cross said, when we reach four kids, that I probably will relent. And I didn't, did I? Because I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. He didn't change his commands. The be fruitful and multiply was repeated and not repealed. The world is heading towards eugenics, genocide. The demographic winter is happening right in front of your eyes. But God's command to be fruitful and multiply. Apparently, the only person I know in my family who actually believes that is me. I have some hope for Julia. I have no evidence of anybody else because they're isolated from me. And the few I do have some evidence for, you know, especially Eric Lee and Jack, clearly say no. And may I also remind you one more thing. I was appealing to my wife for reconciliation. She actually sent me, was it an email or a letter? I think it was an email. That kind of gave a hint, some hope. Then I stated that, and I think that was email, one of the pieces of evidence we would have that true reconciliation occurred was the 10th child. And it was only days later. I think it was only days. It may have been a couple weeks, but I think it was only days later. A gentleman came in my door, because my door was open at that time, handed me some papers, saying my wife wanted to go to the state for a state-decreed divorce. My wife said, this Genesis 1:28 does not apply to me. She's rejecting God's command. That was blatant. And, of course, as I point out, state-decreed divorces have nothing to do with what the Lord states. And, you know, and again, let me remind you, Mr. Cross, she's not a free woman. Romans 7, Mark 10, and so forth, the easy stuff. But that's in the Bible, and apparently you, I'm guessing, seem to subscribe more to the Talmud. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. I am concerned for my family. And that's why I made yet another long video. There's one person in the family who will give you evidence that he's striving to understand the Lord and be obedient to him. I look at people like Daniel Hale. Long videos tend to be a habit lately. One of the things I've noticed, a contrast, because a few weeks ago, you know, I find it fascinating, Project Veritas, because they're sensational. They may indeed, you know, be quite accurate. It's like the arguments about WikiLeaks. A lot of people don't like what they've done. But thus far, no one can point to any evidence where what they exposed was a fallacy. And that's the problem. They expose things, you know, collateral murder, things that the UK government, the US government, the Vatican, some stuff in Russia, some stuff in Germany, was in other places. A whole lot in the US, but anyway. It's the exposing things that they don't like, so they're vindictive. Daniel Hale is the same way. And then, of course, we see this in the corporate world. And what Project Veritas has done is expose a lot of things in the corporate world. You know, and of course, they are attacked. They exposed, you know, it's like the one lady in Texas who, you know, they have her on camera saying, yeah, you know, I'm buying votes kind of thing. And she ended up getting arrested. But they say that the organization lies. So it's the same kind of thing. You attack them for political reasons, but you don't attack. You know, it's the same thing. When you attacked Obama, attack him on facts, not because you don't like him. When you attacked Trump, attack him on facts, not that you don't like him. When you attack Biden, same thing. Attack him on facts, not because you don't like him. Don't use fallacies. because that makes your credibility weak. But, well, except with your, you know, your rah-rah crowd. But Project Veritas has their rah-rah crowd, you know, the political right. What's happened is they've also had some whistleblowers who expose things within Pinterest, Facebook, Google, and so forth. And the one gentleman a few weeks ago exposed, was it Pinterest or was it, well, Facebook, because it owns it, and exposed some things, and it did lose his job, did a fundraising effort, and in the matter of a few days raised $500,000. He is overtly Christian, and you know, people look and marvel and brow wow for this guy for exposing the misdeeds of Facebook. And you know, he's the exception because he had the sensational organization that gave him the stage, and therefore he had a large audience, and people said rah rah. You know how many people, well, and he even pointed out, he said his estimate was a quarter of the people that he worked with knew the problem, but were too scared to come forward. Because what happens when you come forward? He's the exception. Daniel Hale is the rule. You end up in prison or other things. Typical thing is you're kind of pushed in the corner or fired. I know this well because I've been pushed in the corner more than once. And fired more than once. That's why I describe myself as a repeat offender. But like most, unlike prison or death, that hasn't happened to me. Or torture, that hasn't happened to me yet. Abandonment has. You know, again, if I'm doing something wrong, if my stance are wrong, correct me where I'm wrong. I know that's an offensive term. My wife doesn't like that term. I stand with it. Correct me where I'm wrong. I'm having another dialogue with somebody on the statement, the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud. Actually, in the last week, I have three dialogues with people on that statement. And the thing is, it's like the pro-life thing. I can not only defend the value of life because we're made in God's image, but God's command. In the same way, I can defend the veracity of Scripture and the fact that the Lord does not call for the institutional church. But now, what I'm doing is people who are professional Christians in the institutional church, just like I was a threat to people, you know, like had the jobs at Westar, I was a threat to them because I was pointing out that they were thieves, so I had to be gotten rid of. I point out the institutional church is a fraud. Those people employed by it or have that ego trip because they're in a leadership position have to silence me. They won't come to the table. They won't rationally dialogue with me. They will abandon me. I'm sending a lot of cards out to MetaView leadership right now. I was going to do that, or I was going to do Covenant. I did MetaView. Anyway. You know, and of course, thus far, silence. I'm not going to stop. Reconciliation, you know, again, it's the 2 Timothy 4, the all patience. You don't give up. And I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up on reconciling the leadership of institutional churches with extended family, most notably Jim Cross. Reconcile relationships with my kids and the woman I love and adore. I will take any punishment due to my wife that the Lord wants to place in this world on me, because I love her. My request is, at least once, for one moment, before life ends, that I can look at my wife's face and see her look back at me, hopefully an embrace and mutual love. That is my hope, being all things that I want in this world. Please, someone tell my wife. I love her.